Hi there. This is Darren Spoo, pastor at First Baptist Church in Tulsa, and welcome to our weekly podcast. For more information about First Baptist Tulsa, check us out on the web, tulsafbc.org. First Baptist Tulsa has a simple mission: to glorify God in all we do. We want to make God look good because He is good. May God bless you with His goodness this week.
Our scripture reading today comes from Revelation chapters 11 and 12. Then God's temple in heaven was opened, and within His temple was seen the ark of His covenant. And there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, an earthquake, and a severe hailstorm. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with a moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its heads. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. Then the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring, those who keep God's commands and hold fast their testimony about Jesus.
So we are nearing the end of this teaching series on the book of Revelation. And as we turn the corner into the last half of this teaching series, I just want to remind you of some very basic things. And these are things that I keep in front of me every single week as I'm preparing for this. The book of Revelation is not about some dark, distant future. The book of Revelation is about Jesus Christ, okay? It is about Him. The book of Revelation serves the purpose of every other book in the Bible. It is there to help us to know and to love and to experience Jesus Christ in a deeper way. So if you're reading the book of Revelation in a way that doesn't help you know Jesus better, then I will be bold enough to say you're reading it wrong. This is the revelation of Jesus Christ. So in all of our readings, don't miss Him. I have a friend in Texas who's been following our podcast on Revelation. And he said, I went to pick up a friend the other night for a church event. He's been listening to the first parts of these sermons. He said, I went to pick up a friend for a church event, and I'd never been on his street or in his neighborhood before. So I'm driving down the street, kind of scrolling through his address in my head and looking for it on the mailboxes and trying to find the right address. He said, little did I know that my friend was standing right there in the driveway, and I drove right past him. He said, I was so busy looking for a place that I missed the person. You know, we can be so busy looking for these signs and these symbols and these catastrophes and miss Jesus Christ. Listen, the book of Revelation is about Him, okay? And the book of Revelation is meant to be read by us as a form of encouragement. Now, there's a young lady here in the church, and with her permission, she said I could share this, that her grandmother taught her growing up that the book of Revelation was not to be read, okay? You don't read the book of Revelation. The only time you read it is when the rapture occurs and you tear it out of your Bible as the rapture is occurring, so you read it on the elevator ride going up, all right? So I don't believe that way. I believe the book of Revelation is meant to be read right now because it's a great encouragement to us. Listen, from Revelation 4 on, there's just a series of 7 visions. 7 times we see heaven. 7 times we see earth. It's a reminder of the majesty of heaven and the messiness of earth. The rewards of heaven, the rigors of earth. This is the world in which we live. So as there are 4 Gospels that surround Jesus' life and help us to understand Him, so there are 7 visions to help us understand the reality of heaven and also the reality of where we're living right now. So we have spent several weeks on that very first vision, Revelation 4:1 to 8:1. That's the vision of the 7 seals. We're going to skip over the vision of the 7 trumpets, and we're going to go to the 3rd vision of Revelation. And it starts out, as with all of these visions, in heaven. So this is Revelation 11, verse 19. Then God's temple in heaven was opened, and within his temple was seen the ark of his covenant. And there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, an earthquake, and a severe hailstorm. Look at the last part of this verse. I am absolutely convinced that the last part of this verse gave birth to the Three Dog Night song, "I've never been to heaven, but I've been to Oklahoma." Lightning striking your church buildings, peals of thunder, earthquakes, hailstorms. This is Oklahoma here, is what this is. Never been to heaven, but I've been to Oklahoma. Yeah. So what would capture the reader's mind in the first century is not all these spectacular things happening. What would capture the reader's mind was what's in the first part of this verse, the Ark of the Covenant. Now, forget everything you learned in the Indiana Jones movies, okay? I want to give you a brief history of the Ark of the Covenant, and I'm going to give you some dates. I'm going to ask you to not check out on me because this is really good stuff here, okay? So we live about 2,000 years after Jesus, okay? So we go back in time 2,000 years. We're about the lifetime of Jesus. If you go back 1,400 years before that, give or take, you're in the lifetime of Moses. Moses was the one who led the Exodus out of Egyptian slavery. He was the one who was commanded to build the Ark of the Covenant. And it was meant to contain some things. The tablets of the Ten Commandments, a container of manna, Aaron's staff. These were the things that were in the ark, but what was not in the ark, but what the ark represented was the presence of God. Wherever the Ark of the Covenant was, this represented the presence of God. So that's 1,400 years before Jesus. And then come along about, 500 years later. Solomon decides to build his temple, the temple in Jerusalem. And he configures this temple like concentric circles. At the very center is the Holy of Holies, the most holy place. And in it, it was made to house, you guessed it, the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, what's more appropriate to be at the center of the temple but that which represents the presence of God? So that's 900 years before Jesus. About 300 years later, 600 years before Jesus, there were problems. The Babylonians were the big kids on the block. They were the bullies. And they came in and they razed Jerusalem. They destroyed the temple and they hauled off the Ark of the Covenant. More than likely, they melted it down for its gold. And it was lost forever. So in the lifetime of Jesus, when Herod rebuilds the temple, he rebuilds it pretty much according to the same specs as Solomon's temple. There's still the Holy of Holies, but there's no ark to put in there. Now, I want you to think about this for just a minute. When Jesus died, we are told that the curtain of the Holy of Holies was ripped in two from top to bottom. And we interpret that as God's presence in the Holy of Holies is now accessible to all of us. And I think that is a valid application of that. But would you also consider that when the temple was torn in two, the curtain was torn in two from top to bottom, the Holy of the Holies was exposed. What was also exposed was the fact it's empty. There's nothing in there. You can't hide it anymore. So if God's not in the temple, where is he? As John begins this third vision, God's temple in heaven, within the temple, there was the Ark of the Covenant. So what we get at this third vision is just a very simple point. I want you to hear me loud and clear. Today, God is in heaven and everything is good. God is still the leader of the universe. He's still in charge. Things haven't gotten outside of his command or his control. God is in heaven today on the throne. So now God is in heaven. That feels good. But what does that mean for those of us who are living out life here on earth? Does that mean that his presence is distant and far away? Well, hang on. Because I said each one of these visions talks about heaven. Okay, God's in heaven. Now our vision comes back down to earth. Okay, so get ready. You're going to be hit with a lot of symbols here, but basically you're going to meet three characters that play out this earthly drama. The great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant, and she cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its head. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. So beyond all these symbols, you meet 3 players in this revelation, in this vision of earth. You meet a woman who is pregnant and about to give birth. Who is this woman? So if you go to the movies, shame on you. If you go to the movies, I'm just kidding. You know this icon from Columbia Pictures. Okay, this woman who is the icon, has been the icon of Columbia Pictures for 25 years. There's been much speculation about who this is. In fact, most people think that is Annette Bening. It looks very much like her. But Michael Dees, who was the artist behind this Columbia Pictures image 25 years ago, did not use Annette Bening. He used a woman named Jerry Jeffries. She was a homemaker in Louisiana, just an ordinary woman who became the symbol of Columbia Pictures. So who is this woman here in Revelation? Well, we're given some hints. The sun, the moon, a crown of 12 stars. If I were to say to you, here is Lady Liberty, wrapped in the stars and stripes, with a bald eagle perched on her arm, you would know I'm talking about symbols of the United States of America. So with the images used here, this woman is just an ordinary woman that no one would ever suspect. Israel, God's people of Israel, about to give birth to a child. It's a symbol of the entire nation. Listen, God made a promise way back in Genesis 12:3 to Abraham. You will bless the entire world. Through you, I will bless all people. So it was God's plan from one man, he would create an entire nation, and from that nation would come one man, Jesus Christ. So here we see the nation of Israel about to give birth to the Messiah, God's son. But all was not going to be easy. There was a large dragon ready to devour the child when it was born. So I want you to get that picture. When we first meet Satan in the Garden of Eden, he's a snake. When we meet him here again in Revelation, he's a dragon. It seems that he has gotten exponentially evil-er. Is that even a word? I don't know if that's a word or not. He's gone from bad to worse. He's just gotten bigger and meaner and stronger. And listen, Satan is a destroyer. He was the one back in the Garden of Eden trying to destroy our relationship with God, came pretty close to doing so. And now he is seen here trying to destroy God's opportunity to restore our relationship with him. So way back in the colonial era, when Britain was in charge of India, they had a problem in Delhi. I don't know how many of you have ever been to Delhi. Delhi had a problem back in the day, back in the colonial era, with cobras. They were rampant in the streets and in stores, and people would get bit by cobras, and they're highly poisonous, very venomous. So the British government set about a very simple strategy. They put a bounty. For every cobra you killed, you could earn so much money. So if you killed a cobra, bring it in, they'll give you some money. Well, a few people decided that instead of catching cobras, why don't they just raise cobras and make all kinds of money? There's always somebody trying to figure out a way to make a little extra money. So you had cobra farmers who had raised cobras, bring these cobras in, turn them into the government, make all kinds of money. When the government found out about it, they put an end to the program. So now you had all these cobra farmers with these worthless cobras. So what did they do? They just turned them loose in the streets of Delhi. So it's called the cobra effect. When something goes from bad to worse. Listen, Satan is the universal cobra effect. He has gone from bad to worse. And here's what I want to do in our time that's left with us this morning. I want to just draw a bullseye around you. I want to give three little statements here that are applications that will bring this down to you. Okay. First of all, it is this. First statement is this. There is evil that exists in the universe. And I believe that it is important for us as followers of Jesus to realize that that evil is personal. I do believe in a real live Satan. Evil is personal. As love is personal through God and Jesus Christ, so evil is personal. It might be helpful to go back and look at Isaiah 14. We're given a bit of Satan's bio. He was an angel. He was made to worship God, but instead of worshiping God, he wanted others to worship him. Do you see that the first sin in the universe was pride, selfishness? Listen, I believe every sin that you and I are tempted with ultimately has selfishness at its core. That same deadly sin that Satan suffered from, the same lethal sin is the one that he tempts us with. So there's evil that exists in the universe. Let me bring it in a little closer. Evil not only exists in the universe, but it is a reality on the planet in which we live. John drives this home in his vision. Look at verse 9. The great dragon was hurled down to earth. That ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, he leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. There's evil in the universe. Evil also exists right here on our planet. Now, you may say, oh, the world's not so bad. Don't be so down on the world. Well, let me just offer you one statistic. In the last 100 years, if you take into account the communist regime in Russia, the communist regime in China, the Nazi regime in Germany, what's happened in communist nations like Cuba, and what is probably happening right now in North Korea, the best statistic is 100 billion people have been killed in the last 100 years for political purposes. 100 billion. We live in a world of destruction. And Satan loves to see destruction. Now, here's where all this is going. Here's the payoff for your patience this morning. There's evil in the universe. There's evil in our world. And this personal evil is out for you. Now, I want you to really listen to this part. This is the most important thing I'm going to say. Satan loves destruction, and he delights when you become self-destructive. And here's how gifted he is. He can make self-destruction look like self-fulfillment. So I'm just asking you to look around, okay? Look at all the behaviors that are happening in our world and in our culture that we think are self-fulfillment that are actually self-destructive. Look at what alcohol can do to your life. Look what drugs can do to your life. Any addiction that you can think of, even addiction to work, can destroy your life and can destroy your family. Man, I'm going to take one and drive it home, because if statistics are right, and I believe they are, 50% of men have problems with pornography. It is a $4 billion a year industry. That's more than what we spend on baseball, football, or basketball. It's a big deal. And pornography, it feels like self-fulfillment, that it gives you great pleasure without any problems, and you're in control of it until you realize you're not. But that is self-destructive behavior. It will destroy your mind. It will destroy your conscience. And ultimately, it will destroy your family, and it will destroy your openness to true intimacy. I want you to catch this, that there is real evil in the universe, and here's his greatest play. Satan wants to make self-destruction look like self-fulfillment. Would you see through that? So here's the very last verse of Revelation 12. The dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring. Guess what? That's us. Satan couldn't devour Jesus. So now he's out to devour us. By the way, do you see all that Revelation 11 and 12 is the Christmas story? It's the Christmas story. But there's no magi or shepherds or angels. This is God coming through Israel, through Christ, to us. It's the Christmas story from heaven's point of view, and it continues that story. Now this is about us. Satan is enraged at us, those who keep God's commands and hold fast to the testimony about Jesus. So in this last verse, I see some action steps that you and I need to take. Evil is real. It exists in our universe. It's present in our world. It's out to get you. Here's what you need to do. Keep God's commands. I believe that the commandments that we are given by God are meant to help us live life the way he intended, the way it best works. Just take the Ten Commandments. You don't have to lie anymore. Forget about having to lie. Live a life of truth. You don't have to run around on your spouse anymore. Love the one you're with. Commit your life to one person. That's a little Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young in there, but that works. Love the one you're with. We are meant to live in right relationship with our parents. These are ways that we live God's commands to make life good. Keep his commands, trust him enough to obey him, and then we don't just live our life according to principles. We live our life in loyalty to a person. Keep God's commands and hold fast to the testimony about Jesus. What is that? That Jesus Christ died so that we can be forgiven. And he lives today so that we can be strengthened. Listen, let's go back to this. You don't have to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders anymore. You are not meant to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, but you are meant to carry the presence of Christ in your life. That he is alive. Get this last part. The Ark of the Covenant is in heaven. God's presence is there. But the testimony of Jesus, he is alive, and he is right here on earth with you.